Tom, mm-hmm. who are you and why are you with us today?
Who am I? That's been a question I've asked myself my entire life. Well, I was born Tom McLaughlin. I grew up in Culver City, California, at the MGM Studios as the place where I played the backlots, and wanted to make movies from the time I was about six. Mm-hmm. And since I had the old movies backlots there, I took my 8mm camera and started with my friends making little horror movies and James Bond kind of movies or anything that we, you know, thought would be cool to do. And then the Beatles hit, and I went into rock and roll. So much for the movie world, and I got into, you know, being the lead singer of a rock and roll band. Did that for about 6 years, I guess it was, 6-7 years. We were opening for The Doors and Iron Butterfly and Pink Floyd and The Animals, all these groups that came through Hollywood. And then I shifted careers again and went to Paris and studied pantomime and movies and acting and dance and all these different arts to become a better performer. Came back and began to just do movie parts. Robots in Disney's The Black Hole as Captain Star. Mutated Bear in John Frankenheimer's Prophecy. Pretty much anything that required any special movement training is what I got to do. And then started writing scripts at that point, making my way back into my first passion, making movies. And once I kind of got myself into a position where I realized, well, if I wanted to really get a movie made, I needed to make a horror movie, because that was the easiest way to get funding. Mm-hmm. And then my first movie was One Dark Night with Meg Tilly, and then my Jason Lives. And as a result of Jason Lives, Friday 13th, Part 6, I'm here tonight, you know, in the wonderful drive-in world, which I haven't even thought was still around, which is great that I had to come to Indiana.
Surprisingly, it is. It's great. This is definitely something that Shelbyville has. It's not a blemish. Mm-hmm. It's not a boring
thing. No, it's a very cool thing.
So on to Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives, which you are definitely known for. First question, I want to know, do you still have Jason's tombstone in your yard?
I still do.
You still do?
Yeah, still freak out people when they come into the backyard and they see this, because it's a real tombstone. I mean, it would take about, you know, four guys to lift it. I mean, it is just absolutely solid, incredibly heavy granite. And, it's probably one of the greatest, you know, things of all the stuff to take from the movie. I don't have a mask. I don't have any of, like, you know.
Is that
the
only
props.
Thing you have from the movie?
No, I also have his coffin. I have Jason's coffin that you see, you know, in the beginning of the movie, and was also used for the teaser trailer where the coffin pops up. And I've had that in my basement for years, and I drag that out from time to time at Halloween shows. We put on Halloween shows like everybody does. And then decided about a year ago that, you know what, I'm not going to sell this thing. I'm going to take it with me. So that's what I'm going to be buried in the mausoleum where we shot One Dark Night, my first movie. So I'm kind of putting it all together at the end. And when people come to visit me, hopefully I'll have worked things out so you can still have a conversation with me beyond.
In terms of horror movies today, what are your thoughts on how they've evolved? Like, do you like modern horror movies, or do you think that... Are you stuck in the past like a lot of other people?
No, like us.
I'm very mixed. It's funny, I also teach film now, which I never thought I would be doing, but somebody offered me a job at Chapman University, Dodge College, in Orange, California. And this summer, I taught with another professor a class called Simply Horrific. And it really was first devoted to horror movies, all from the beginning of the very first ones all the way up to the modern ones. So we showed, you know, all different examples of that, Asian horror, gothic horror, monsters, you know, the movies of the 50s with radioactive, bigger-than-life monsters and things. And ultimately what I was trying to get the class to get to is how simple, which is why the title was Simply Horrific, how the simple are the scariest things, you know. And their assignment was to make a short movie just using your cell phone, you know. No special cameras, nothing. And it was amazing what, you know, when we had them shoot it in the beginning of the class and bring in, you know, this 2-3 minute thing, and then had them redo it at the end of the class, saying basically the same premise, what would you do different now that you've learned all this stuff? And everybody's work was really cool. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, and all very different in terms of the feeling of either no sound in it that made it very scary, or the right kind of sound effects, or certain types of music that had a, you know, very eerie quality to it. Some did just one long continuous take, kind of giving you that first person sense, almost like of a game, you know, going through something scary, which I think is the future of a lot of horror as well as entertainment, is virtual reality, you know. So I'm very big on, you know, having people kind of look into that, see where that can go. But in terms of the movies themselves, you know, so much of them now are kind of a throwback to the stuff that we were doing in the 70s and 80s. It Follows.
That's exactly, yeah, I was going to ask you if you've seen
example,
that.
Very Carpenter-like.
Oh, that movie is just a love letter.
Absolutely love that movie.
Yeah. Carpenter, I love it.
And so, yeah, that sort of, everybody's going, that's cool. And then the ones who know go, yeah, it's cool because it's going back to the simple, you know, aspects of it. What was the other one I just saw recently, too, that was pretty cool? But there's a little boy and his mom in a cabin. Babadook.
Oh, yes, I've heard great things about that.
You haven't seen that yet?
No, I haven't gotten
it. Just, check it out. Again, house, mother, son.
Simple.
That's it. Simple and, you know, was quite effective. I mean, William Friedkin, who made The Exorcist, he made a quote that this was the best horror movie he's seen in decades and things.
Oh, wow.
I wouldn't put it up on that pedestal, but it certainly was nice to see somebody not just sort of ripping off other movies, but going back to that genre and saying, you know, what can we do to make it, you know, scary and work.
Definitely
again.
A problem of, you know, modern horror movies is that they aren't as simple as they used to be, and they're definitely not as subtle as they used to be. You know, in Halloween, you have all the intricacies of just the soundtrack creeping you out. It's not all the special effects, and it's not all the craziness that they're adding to it.
I always say they've lost attention, which to me is far scarier than anything they can show me.
That's the thing about It Follows.
Knowing.
It was so great is that, like, the soundtrack of that movie just made you uncomfortable throughout the entire thing.
Yep.
And it actually, you know, got you kind of scared when you didn't really need to see the stuff to be scared.
So I'm going to skip down on the topic of newer movies. Having directed a Friday the 13th, what did you think of the remake? Or the reboot, whatever
the reboot.
Fancy
whatever
word they
it.
Want to give it.
I don't know. It was hard for most of us that are, you know, fans of the original. When you go back and say, I'm going to redo it, what are you redoing? I mean, is it, in most cases, it's, well, you're getting to make a movie because the title is pre-sold. So then you kind of have that advantage. Are people going to come and check it out? Now, what can you do to make them pleased? Is it they want to literally see that movie redone, or do they want to see something that's completely different that's part of that? And, you know, it's tough because, you know, expectations are at a certain level, and it's really hard to, you know, make people go, yeah, that was better, or that was, you know, so much worse because it didn't have this, this, and this. You know, those choices are very, very difficult.
It's such a hard line to go with in terms of remakes, because there's the people that really want it to be like a shot-by-shot remake, but then there's the people that want it to be completely different. And it's like, who are you going to...
Yeah, it's, who is your audience for this? Because most fans of the original aren't going to say it's better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the, you know, like, I just saw the new M. Night Shyamalan film, The Visit. And I saw it with a bunch of, you know, film students, packed auditorium. They loved it. They screamed and yelled and stuff. And I was sort of sitting there going, you know, that's amazing to me, because it's not that great, but it really worked for them, because I think the idea of the found footage movies we've been doing, it wasn't quite that, but it was that same idea that these two kids were shooting with high-definition cameras, so it looked really good. It wasn't shaky cam. So I think they loved the fact that that felt fresh to them. But the thing that was probably the thing I liked best is the grandparents were just like two, I mean, like you would see here in Indiana, just, you know, older man, older woman, who are kind of quirky grandparents, and then at night, they're really out there. So it was relatable to most people in terms of, yeah, those are like normal folks, but that are really freaky. And it really seemed to work for the audience, and I had to keep kind of standing back going, wow, that's...
So overall, how did you feel about the visit? We're curious, because we just saw it.
Yeah. Here's my barometer. Would I want to go see it again? No.
Okay.
So that's... It was like, I saw it. I really loved that I saw it with an audience that loved it, because if I saw it alone, I probably would have really not liked it, but appreciated certain aspects of it. So... But I've seen that happen my whole life. I used to go to, every time Stanley Kubrick had a new movie, go first day, first show at the Chinese theater, and it was all people that just absolutely were there just to celebrate that movie. So it was like a great high. Then you'd go and see the movie again someplace else where it was just normal folks, and it didn't work. And I found myself going, now, were we all crazy, or are these people just not getting it?
Well, that's how we felt about The Visit. It's getting great reviews, and everybody loved it. We did.
Yeah.
So it's like, did we not get it?
Yeah.
Because I definitely appreciate a lot of it for what it was and what it was doing. Overall, would I see it again? No. Not at all. But
it follows. I wanted to go see again. I wanted to, I was very entertained and enjoyed it.
It is a great movie.
I was fortunate enough to see that opening night with a very, very packed house. It was very, very good. Yeah. A lot of people did enjoy it.
That's great.
Now, Kyle, this is a question I want you to ask, because this is your horror culture.
Horror culture today, like conventions and just fans lining up for you and wanting you here. How do you feel about that? Just in general.
Is it surreal?
It is really surreal.
These movies, did you ever think a line years later?
I mean, here's the deal, quite honestly. I mean... to me, the classic Universal monster movies, Frankenstein, Dracula, all that. I mean, that's what I grew up on as a kid. And they would play those things because they could get the rights very cheaply on TV 5 nights in the week. So once I got my homework done, 9 o'clock, I'd sit there and watch Frankenstein 5 nights in a row. So, next week, Dracula, whatever. So it's like you knew the dialogue. They were your friends. Mm-hmm. They came into your house. They were your monsters. And then we kind of lost all that until the 70s and 80s when, Michael Myers, Jason, Freddy, Hellraiser, Leatherface, we had like monsters again. But we all felt like we were posers. We felt like, people like this in the slasher movies, but they're not like really great classic movies by any means. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make cool movies like in the 70s that they had as filmmakers in the 80s. Star Wars, Godfather, Exorcist, all those. So now we cut to 30 years later and there's, generation after generation loves those movies of the 80s. Loves the style, loves the feeling, and of course, monsters. It's like, and because then suddenly we go, there hasn't really been any like real great, original monsters. Mm. That was the period. And the merchandising, as we've seen, the masks, all the stuff.
Insane.
And we sort of used to joke about, at that time there was cereal, Frankenberry and, Chocolat and stuff. And it's like, I bet there's going to be Jason Berry one day or Leatherface.
Which there probably will.
And there probably will now. But then it was like, no, can't be serious. So, to have more fan mail now than I've ever had before. People just, adore these films, and and they're kind of like part of their lives. Mm-hmm. And I get it, because so was Frankenstein, Dracula, and stuff to me. Yeah. They were my monsters, and you guys got to see them on VHS or DVD now or streaming, so you can see them all the time and own them. We could only see that stuff, either on TV, the old stuff, or in the movie theaters once, unless you went back again, and then they're gone.
The advent of streaming and digital sharing and everything has definitely, I think, broadened the audience.
Broadened the
horizon.
Huge
audience.
Pause for a minute?
Oh, yeah.
See, he's got a line. We can...
All right, Kyle.
All right, what's the next? All right, we were talking about conventions earlier.
Yes.
What is your favorite like convention or fan expo you've been to?
Favorite convention? Did one of the Comic-Con years ago with all the Jasons that they could get a hold of. C.J. Graham, who was in mine, and, Kane Hodder, and, White, Ted White. And so just to be able to sit at a table with all the guys who played Jason was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, of course, Comic-Con has now become such a event. I mean, it's like crazy. Yeah. But I really like, I mean, I went to Horror Hound a few years ago, which I guess is in Cincinnati.
That's all over the place. Is it? We have one in Indianapolis as well.
Yeah, I can't recall now which one it was, but I that was great. You know, the fans, the fact that, you know, the where they had it was like, you know, Holiday Inn or something, and they had, you know, just like a water theme park that was inside of it, and just kind of hanging out and watching everybody, just having a great time, and everybody in tattoos of the monsters all over their body. Mm-hmm. I thought, this is just incredible, you know, just an incredible part of fandom.
It's a great environment to be around, tons and tons of people that really love the things
yeah,
that you love.
Absolutely.
How many conventions do you do a year anyway?
I don't do that many. Part of it is because I'm the writer-director. Mm. You know, most of the fans want, you know, the actors.
Yeah.
You know, do the pictures and all the rest of that. Being a part actor and now, of course, a rock and roll singer, it's like, it's no big thing for me to, you know, do pictures and mm-hmm. tapes and all the rest of that. But I think just in general, you know, they want to kind of see the people they've seen on the screen.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, completely understandable.
Yeah. Do you keep in touch with the actors?
Yes, actually I do. We had, if you see the, what's that called? The, Camp Crystal Lake Memories, the documentary that they did. I mean, seeing the Jason, I was so honored when I saw the one for Jason Lives, because everybody just had such positive things to say about the shooting and how everything went, because we did have a ball. You know, we were mm-hmm. all in our late 20s, and we were up all night, six nights a week,
mm.
shooting the thing. So, and there was just a real family that kind of sprung out of it. So I don't think there's anybody in that cast that I don't have some sort of communication with on a somewhat regular mm. basis. And then, of course, when we have screenings and stuff, everybody shows up and loves showing up
yeah.
and seeing each other. So, yeah.
Not a bad time.
That's good.
Time
you only hear about bad yeah. experiences yeah. in movies. You never hear about the good
like
ones.
Like Island of Dr. Moreau. Luckily, it was not like this.
Well, that was pretty extreme, that one.
Yeah.
Back on the convention thing, what is the weirdest item that you've had anybody want to sign?
Wow. I haven't gotten into private parts yet.
Okay.
I've heard some people that, you know, I figure I'm going to be finally a real rock star once I start signing breasts and bums and things. But, you know, I think one of the strangest things was that somebody wanted me to sign their child who's, you know, was too young to come, but they wanted the signature on a 8x10 of a 3-year-old, you know, which I thought was very weird. Because,
okay, right.
But I understood the way he explained it to me is that well, when she gets older, she'll really appreciate this.
Okay.
Okay,
I can understand from that. I feel like without the explanation, it's just like, hey, sign this infant photo.
Yeah, I know. It could be read very many other ways.
It's a silly question, but something I always worry about. Has anyone ever asked you to sign something that you had nothing to do with?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they just had the wrong movie or
well, lots of times they don't have anything else to sign and they'll bring up something, you know, and I'll say, well, you know, I didn't direct that. It's like, yeah, I know, I just, you know, would you sign this? So that even happened tonight. You know, I had a couple of things that people picked up and came over and it's like, do you want, I can have sign this. Like, no, this is fine. So, okay, whatever.
Whatever makes you happy. With directing the 6th movie of a franchise, mm-hmm. how much freedom were you given?
I want to say total. I mean, Frank Mancuso Jr., who was kind of in charge of the whole franchise itself, they were so kind of devastated after part 5 and they're afraid of possibly losing the franchise. He said, look, just bring him back. Bring back Jason in some way, you know. And I said, okay. And then I said, I want to put humor in it. And he said, just don't make fun of Jason. So I wrote a treatment, which is actually in the, you know, if you, somebody gets my book, Strange Idea of Entertainment,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, obviously from the movie, that quote. In the book, in the back, is the actual treatment from my Friday the 13th. And you read that, and that's the movie. And that's what I wrote and turned into them. And I said, this is the movie I want to make. And they went, great. And there was only a few things that changed. The motorhome sequence, when Jason got a hold of that belt with all the stuff mm-hmm. from the paintball survivor, there was actually a gun on that thing. So in the motorhome, he actually shot Court. He shot up the, you know, the thing. So we ended up taking that out, just figuring, no, he's got to do hand-to-hand. It can't, you know, it can't be a gun. And it also kind of went against my policy that everything in there had to be done almost like superhuman, you know. I mean, and even like driving a Bowie knife through somebody's head, you got to be really damn strong to pull that off, you know. But everything else, I mean, pushing ahead, you know, Darcy DeMoss's face, you know, through the thing. I mean, completely over-the-top stuff. But the fans, you know, loved that.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a result, everything kind of I did was like, yeah, that's fine. The big difference from the treatment, if you read the treatment, is at the end of the movie, you meet Jason's father. And that's in the book that came out on Jason Lives and things. And the feeling was, look, we don't want the fans to think that the movie, the series, is going to go off and now be about his dad. They want to make sure that you, when the movie ended, you knew it was Jason was going to come back, and it wasn't over. So yeah, that ended up being taken out. But I thought that was cool to be able to show. Yeah, you think his mother's strange? Wait, do you mean his dad? You know?
Wait until you see the whole family.
Yeah.
So was there anything like super crazy you wanted to be in the movie and just couldn't do it?
Super
like
crazy.
Logistically or
financially?
Yeah. I don't
effects have come a long way since then.
Yeah,
that's why
there's, yeah. I mean, you know, like the triple decapitation that we did, a lot of that got cut down by the MPAA. You know, that, I think, if I had my druthers, it probably would have been bloodier and, you know, more unique. But they made us cut it down so much anyway, it wouldn't have made much sense. The thing that was most surprising is the taking Sheriff Garris and doing that back bend, which there's no blood or any gore in that. That got attacked more than anything else and with for the ratings board because they just found it so over the top horrific. And by the time you got to that kill, you know, they were like, okay, enough. So even though they took a lot of frames out of it and, you know, we had to make some changes, it still is a very effective kill. You know, it's still one of the more memorable things because it's what kind of happens in your imagination and the sound, you know, the cracking that happened.
Is there a different horror franchise that you would have wanted to be a part of other than Friday the 13th?
I was offered Nightmare on Elm Street 4 right after I did this, and I went in. They were interested in me doing it. I was interested in, you know, doing it if I could do something cool with it. But when I sat down in the meeting with everybody, I said, so when are you shooting this? And they said, oh, we're already shooting. So what do you mean you're already shooting? It's like, oh, no, we shoot the different effects and stuff. And it's like, well, where's the director? Well, hopefully you're going to do that. And I go, no, I need to be part of the whole process. So, you know, I didn't do it. And, of course, Rennie Harlan came in and did it. And that was probably one of the, you know, bigger of the movies, because by that point it had been, the series had been out on VHS and beta, so it had a much bigger following than anybody ever expected.
I don't say was the TV show out by 4?
No.
Yeah,
because
I
did the
TV,
I did the second episode of that, and that was a lot of fun. You know, I had total, you know, control on that too. They just said, yeah, go in and do something crazy, you know, which is what we did.
Speaking of control, I've always wondered with trailers for movies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have control over those, or
not at
is
all?
That...
You have input, you know, but they really have a method of how they think they're going to sell something. Sometimes they're completely wrong. Lots of times they're completely wrong, and other times they pay people a lot of money who have tested and have supposedly knowledge of what will grab an audience. And then, of course, once they get a formula, as you've seen over and over, you know, there's a certain style, and then at the end, there's always the wham, you know, the big boom, you know. And, you know, those are only as good as how funny the joke is at the punch or, you know, or the effect or whatever. But I, you know, I love when I see something that's completely different, but they get nervous. You know, different is scary, you know.
Yeah.
The same, it's like, okay, we know people like this, so we're going to, you know, do the same thing.
Well, Tom, I've had a fantastic time talking to you.
Great.
That has been awesome.
Talking to you guys, too. Thanks.
Where can we find you? What do you have going on? Let's get some plugs in.
Okay, get you some plugs in. go on Amazon. I'd love you to take a look at the book, Strange Idea of Entertainment, Conversations with Tom McLaughlin. I spent 3 months with Joe Madre, who did a hell of a great documentary on horror movies, American Horror, Red, White, and Blue. He did the interviews in this book, and so you get a real sense of how all these movies came together. Some great pictures and stuff in there, and they, you know, the Jason Lives in the back, you know, the treatment. Have a band, The Sloths, S-L-O-T-H-S, thesloths.net, or on Facebook, The Sloths. you know, check us out. We've got a record out called Back from the Grave. Very appropriate. And if you like classic hard rock kind of style, that's kind of what we do. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to be touring around, so you can hopefully, you know, watch for us there. And a music video coming out called One Way Out that we just shot last week, and hopefully it'll be out around Halloween.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, guys. Yes.